although a very predictable forum, I think, for this town, much the same as it is, I think, in other parts of the state of Alaska. The one thing that I spoke to all the people there before we ever started was to try to think long-term and try to think statewide. I think that's a difficult task, particularly with this kind of a forum. This forum did, and I personally walked around to every room. We had 10 rooms going with probably about 10 people in each one of the rooms. And I think, as my colleague said, that it was a kind of a mix. We had state employees with people there from the governor's office. We had some people from the private sector. And we had a lot of a mixture of people that were involved there. Some of the comments that were going on in the rooms and even afterwards, I thought were equally as important as the numbers that came out. For example, some of the folks said that, you know, this is an almost impossible task. You give us too little time to do a mathematical equation. You set up some fixed figures that we have to reach, and you give us three separate ways in which to do that. And we don't have enough information from which to determine what the consequences of our decision are going to be. And of course, that's why we're all here, because we hear the debate and we listen to the testimony and we dialogue and debate among ourselves and we see the privileged information. One of the folks said that we should be discussing or soliciting from the public the priorities, philosophical questions of priorities of spending. Not necessarily what should we cut from what we're spending today, but shouldn't the public have some voice in what kind of public expenditures or spending are taking place generally? In essence, more philosophical input from the public, and I thought that was quite good. It was brought out that in one case, for example, that over a 10-year period of time, that the numbers of boards and commissions have almost doubled, and that they're currently costing, or I guess back in 87, they were costing the state $50 million. Now, this is coming from Juneau. People are alerted to and noticed, I think, of the fact that government probably does have some inefficiencies. And I think, as my colleague said, they were saying in almost every case that government should be cut around 5%. And in one particular case, they said go in and essentially have all of the administrative costs of every budget, of every department. That is, take the administrative budget and have it in half. That came out of one committee. Others, and then they said, and additional to that, you know, take a 5%. We don't have enough time or information from which to say where that 5% should come from, but you do, and so you go back and do it. I think Juneau people were very ready to step up to the batter's plate here and pay their share of taxes. They were interested, I think, in all forms of taxes. As one lady said, if it moves, tax it. I don't think that, incidentally, is generally the feeling we have in this district. I think it might have been, for what we heard from the 100 people that showed up there. But I don't believe it necessarily represents our entire district here. There was a consensus, has been said, however, that we should go after the sin taxes, the alcohol and the tobacco. Our people, in several cases, said not only agree to the governor's level, but double them. So they were really ready to sock it to him. All things aside, even Juneau called for cuts, greater efficiencies in government, and I, for one, am going to take a hard look at the results of this and bury this in my mind as to one of the statements from my district, along with surveys and conversations and people coming by on my office. And I, for one, am going to try to look at this next year's budget as to what's best for the state of Alaska, all the state of Alaska, over a long period of time. And I urge all of you to do the same thing.
Mr. Kopanen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I ask your unanimous consent to speak on the L.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, Mr. Kopanen.
I don't wish to go at any great length, however, I do feel that L's are a proper topic for St. Patrick's Day, and you will notice the paper tag that I have about repealing the L. I rise partly because of the comments of the speaker from East Anchorage. I found it a very poignant scene that he paints for us in words of the state of the orphan coming, begging yet more from the bowl, from the oatmeal, the big cauldron of oatmeal. And I would only point out that that big bowl, that big cauldron of oatmeal belongs to us. It belongs to the orphan, not to the cook. Thank you.
Mr. Boucher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to speak briefly on the same subject. I've watched
Without objection, you have the floor, Mr. Boucher.
Thank you, sir. I've watched the debate, and if you'll forgive me, I would Chuck Herbert, who was the Commissioner of Natural Resources in not only territorial days, but for Governor Egan's first two administrations, and we were discussing those moments where the decision were made relative to Prudhoe Bay, because indeed this is what we're talking about. Primary, the figures that have been bantered on both sides, and I respect the arguments, but there's been developed here a kind of a circle the wagons approach and a them and us approach to things. I think that's a bit unfortunate. Granted, it is an adrenaline-driven issue, but I, for just a second, would like to present another perspective. The amount of dollars that we do or don't get are not controlled by us. They're driven by world market forces. We've seen that in the last 12 months. However, what is controlled by us is the development of the reservoir itself. I recall in the early debate when we were struggling to get the pipeline approved, and I was speaking throughout the country, I spoke to the Colorado joint session of the House and Senate, and one of the senators rose and he said, who are you kidding? It's going to be impossible to develop that reservoir in any meaningful way. He threw a bunch of geological figures out and he said, I doubt seriously if you will get 4 billion barrels of oil out of the field. And this was an argument that by a number of newspapers, including the New York Times, was picked up. In other words, the argument that was jumped on was, is it worth $3 or $4 billion or billion barrels of oil to disturb the pristine wilderness of Alaska? And one of the debates that we said is that, hey, we love Alaska, we are going to see that the resource is extracted in an environmentally sound manner, and that we are going to maximize that resource. Well, I think we can look forward, as the economists are doing, and this has primarily been a battle of, I would call, the bean counters, with very few engineers making the presentation of what indeed is our role here. We are custodians of the resource called oil and gas. And while the world prices, Mr. Speaker, control the dollars which the economists are talking about, we control through Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation, the flow of the field. And the figure climbed to 9.6. It's now up to 11 billion barrels. I think there is not enough focus in this debate as to how we can maximize that field, how we can continue to maintain the flow as close to 2 million barrels. Roughly, there is 1 billion barrels more that has been produced than was predicted a handful of years ago. And I think that that itself should be an area that we're focusing on. I intend to present some figures in that area to finance this afternoon. Right? We are custodians of this resource, just as we are of our fish, our timber, and our coal. It's more than black liquid flowing south. And I think we don't need to talk about how much was left here or what was spent here, but the thing that we charged industry with in the early development of the field was develop it and maximize the resource in an environmentally sound manner. It could have been possible to simply turn the spigot on and let it flow. And we've seen examples of this in Indonesia and in West Texas. I think that the combination of both industry and a strong state government have seen this valuable resource, not just only to our state, but to our people, develop. It's a model for development any place in the world today. So I would like to see, as we argue over how many spoons full of oatmeal are left in the plate, I would rather see how we can grow more oats to make more oatmeal, because I think that will benefit us all. And I would recommend that before we bring it to the floor, let's challenge industry. Have you been good custodians? What is happening with this water injection? How much more oil is it possible to extract from the field? Because 0% of zero is zero. And I thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak on this, Mr. Speaker, but I have followed the testimony and I haven't heard anybody talking about what technology or what opportunities are there for us to get more oil and maximize that, protect the gas flow that will ultimately come out of there. And I think that when we're talking about that factor, which we can control as a state, that is maximizing our oil, I think that there may be some answers in that area that provide us with a bridge toward the ANWR. Because the longer we can extend that flow of oil out into the 90s, the better all of us are going to be. So I would like to see some focus on how dollars can flow into our treasury by continuing to have a strong partnership that maximizes the resource in an environmentally sound manner. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like permission of the body to speak on per diem.
Is there objection? Mr. Davis, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to point out to the members that that there is a memo of in your boxes on per diem, and the next legislative council will be taking up possible changes to the law. Thank you.
Other special orders, Mr. Gruenberg.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd request the privilege of the floor to speak on the ANWR legislation.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, Mr. Gruenberg, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I spoke last time we met on the Senate bill that was moving through the Senate Energy Committee, Senate Bill 406, dealing with the development of ANWR. specifically the revenue-sharing provision of that legislation. All members should have in their boxes a copy of the resolution that's going to be introduced on Monday, and a request if you'd like to co-sponsor that. It indicates the sense of the body that we would like to have our Statehood Act honored, and that we would like this bill not to be used as a precedent for a reduction from 90% under the Statehood Act to 50% under the present language of the bill. And quoting from yesterday's Juno Empire, one of our senators, Senator Murkowski, was concerned about the bill, and another provision of the bill, he used stronger terms than I used in my statements on the floor the day before yesterday. And that was the provision that he termed a blackmail clause, that if one provision of the bill, the Senate bill, is unconstitutional, the remainder of the bill is void. Maybe he's right. Maybe that is a blackmail clause. And if it is, it's going to be used directly contrary to this state's interest when they try to reduce our state's revenue share from the 90% to the 50%. And I hope that the members will join me in co-sponsoring this legislation and moving it through the process so that we let the Congress know, since the Senate bill is on the fast track in Congress, let the members of Congress know that this state will not sit idly by and allow our Statehood Act to be violated, and will not sit idly by and allow our revenue shares to be depleted in this manner. The long-range fiscal future of this state and the long-range constitutional future of this state and every other state depend on our acting, and acting firmly, and acting now. Thank you.
Mr. Menard.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to address the body on leprechauns.
Is there objection?
It only seems appropriate on a day like today, Mr. Speaker, that I tell the story of the two leprechauns that went up to the convent and pounded on the door, asked for Mother Superior to come forward, and asked the good mother if they had a nun that was a little smaller in the rectory. And she couldn't think of it, and the one little leprechaun kept real persistent about it and kept asking questions about the size of a nun that was in the rectory, and the other leprechaun was really fidgety and getting nervous about it. And finally he said, you sure, ma'am, that there's not a wee little nun in the rectory? And she thought, and she finally said no, she couldn't assure them that there was. And so the two turned and walked down the walk, and real frustrated, and the other one leprechaun was telling the other one, he says, that's what I've been trying to tell you, Joe. He says you've been messing around with a penguin.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that we adjourn before we get in any more trouble till 11 o'clock Monday morning.
11 a.m. Monday.